a realistic and in-depth armor system than I had originally assumed at first glance, by allowing players to wear special types of clothing under or on top of their armor via two special subslots called the underlayer and the overlayer. These two new slots allowed for players to further customize or enhance the armor that they wore by wearing special types of clothing that provided minor benefits across a variety of equipment slots. In my case, I had chosen to wear an arming jacket, also known as a gambeson, as an underlayer to provide an extra layer of defense and comfort while wearing the chainmail shirt. As for the overlayer, so far I discovered that it was possible to wear a thick layer of furs, which I imagined would help prevent hypothermia from setting in while exploring colder environments. Though given the rather warm weather we'd been having around Aldford of late, wearing a layer of furs on top of already sweltering armor was a great way to bring on a serious case of heatstroke. The only downside to this feature was that not wearing an underlayer wasn't a viable or comfortable option for those who wanted to wear heavier types of armor. Adding in a touch of realism, players who chose not to wear an underlayer with heavier armor would quickly experience chafing, rashes, and be generally miserable as the rough and heavy armor rubbed their skin raw. Luckily enough, the statistical benefits of wearing an underlayer was attractive enough on its own that the penalties rarely came into play. Setting the chain shirt down on a nearby empty rack, I reached for my gambeson, seeing its description fill my vision as I pulled it free from the stand and slipped it over my shoulders. Quilted gambeson. Slot, underlayer. Chest, arm, shoulders. Item class, common. Item quality, fine, plus 10%. Armor, 25. Durability, 120 out of 120. Weight, 1 kilogram. Favored class, any. Level, 13. Buttoning the jacket closed, I took the time to straighten it carefully before pulling the chainmail shirt over my head. Feeling comfortable with how the armor was hanging off me, I turned back to the armor rack and, with practiced ease, equipped the rest of my armor, checking each item for damage or wear as I put it on, carefully reading their descriptions as they flashed by my eyes. Blackened iron arm guards. Slot, arms. Item class, good. Plus 15%. Item quality, relic. Armor, 23. Armor type, light. Strength, plus 1. Agility, plus 1. Durability, 90 out of 90. Weight, 1 kilogram. Favored class, martial. Level 13. Blackened iron cap. Slot, head. Item class, good, plus 15%. Item quality, relic. Armor, 34. Armor type, light. Strength, plus 1. Agility, plus 1. Durability, 60 out of 60. Weight, 1 kilogram. Favored class, martial, level 13. Blackened iron greaves. Slot, boots. Item class, good, plus 15%. Item quality, relic. Armor, 40. Armor type, light. Strength, plus 1. Agility, plus 1. Durability, 80 out of 80. Weight, 2 kilograms. Favored class, martial, level 13. Blackened iron chain gloves. Slot hands, item class good, plus 15%. Item quality, relic. Armor, 23. Armor type, light. Strength, plus 1. Agility, plus 1. Durability, 70 out of 70. Weight, 1 kilogram. Favored class, martial, level 13. Blackened iron chain pants. Slot legs, item class good, plus 15%. Item quality, relic. Armor, 57. Armor type, light. Strength, plus 1. Agility, plus 1. Durability, 80 out of 80. Weight, 3 kilograms. Favored class, martial, level 13. Blackened iron shoulder guards. Slot, shoulders. Item class, good, plus 15%. Item quality, relic. Armor, 28. Armor type, light. Strength, plus 1. Agility, plus 1. Durability, 80 out of 80. Weight, 1.5 kilograms. Favored class, martial, level 13. Fur mantle of swiftness. Slot back. Item class, magical. Item quality, good, plus 15%. Armor, 19. Agility, plus 4. Durability, 80 out of 80. Base material, fur. Weight, 1 kilogram. Favored class, any martial. Level 12. With each piece of armor I put on, I felt my strength and agility improve, the minor bonuses of each item adding up. Without a doubt, I probably have the best all-around set of armor in the town. I couldn't help but smile with pride as I inspected my gear. working from the seemingly endless pile of broken chainmail scraps and armor fragments we'd recovered from the tower, I'd managed to cobble together a set of armor for myself, my friends, and Freya's group, giving all of us a rather substantial advantage over the other players in Aldford. Which we thankfully haven't been forced to show, I thought happily, looking back on the last few weeks. All the players have been eager to help out and carry their own weight. Plus, the memory of Graves is still reasonably fresh in everyone's mind, so no one has tried to make a scene. I couldn't help but check over my attributes one more time after having equipped all of my gear. I always enjoyed seeing the contrast between my regular unarmored self and my fully equipped self. Attributes, strength, 53 out of 64. Agility, 43 out of 58. Constitution, 40. Intelligence, 48. Willpower, 18. Almost two levels worth of stats added to both strength and agility just from gear alone. I waved a hand to dismiss the character sheet information from my vision and turned back towards the forge, intent on cleaning up my mess before setting out for the day. That's almost double what my old Webwood Striker armor set gave. Though, in fairness, this armor set is a tier higher in rarity, in addition to being three levels high. Oh, that reminds me, I need to check on Razor. Pulling my trusty blade from its sheath, my heart sank as I realized that it had seen better days. The bronze metal no longer carried its old bright sheen, and numerous battle scars now adorned the length of the sword. I'd done my best to repair the weapon, smoothing out chips and completely replacing the hilt and wrapping, but it was a losing battle at best. As much as I hated to admit it, it was only a matter of time before I was forced to retire Razor in favor of a more durable weapon. Unfortunately, the core of the blade was simply too worn and damaged for me to melt down the blade and try reforging it for a second time.
Oh, morning, Lyrian!
Jenkins's voice echoed through the foundry, interrupting my thoughts.
Guess I'm never gonna get an earlier start than you, eh?
Oh, morning, Jenkins! I turned to see the dark-skinned craftsman walking towards me. Why on earth would you want to start early anyway? You have a pretty wife-to-be to stay in bed with. Jenkins suddenly coughed in embarrassment, watching the grin spread across my face. It's about time you proposed to Sheila anyway, I continued, watching the man break into a nervous smile. We were all wondering when you'd finally get around to it.
Well, I mean, she wakes up with the sun for her morning prayers.
Jenkins stammered before he managed to collect himself.
I try not to leave until she does.
I smiled knowingly at the man and nodded. Have you two set a date yet?
Not yet, to be honest,
Jenkins replied, clearly happy to be on more familiar ground.
With all these new settlers, we aren't sure when we'll have a chance.
We'll figure something out, I told the man while shifting my glance back to Razor. We just need to get everyone settled in.
True, though I'm happy to say that everything is going well so far.
Jenkins said enthusiastically before waving a hand at Razor.
Something wrong with your sword?
Wear and tear, I'm afraid. I think its days are numbered. I sighed as I showed Jenkins the sword.
It's certainly been well used.
Jenkins nodded, his expert eye looking over the blade.
As much as it pains me to say, starting fresh would be the best course. There isn't much left we could do to repair this blade. Smelting it down and reforging it again would likely weaken the core too much for it to be trustworthy in battle.
I know. I turned the blade over in my hand before returning it to its sheath. We really need to get the new smelter working, so we can start smelting the iron we've recovered from the tower.
Do you really think that will make a difference?
Jenkins asked with a quizzical expression on his face.
I've worked with metals for nearly a decade and a half, and I've never seen iron behave the way that the scraps you've recovered do.
I don't think it's just iron anymore, I replied, motioning to the armor that I was wearing. I think it's been changed.
Changed? You mean blackened?
Jenkins asked with a frown, waving a hand at my gear.
Like the armor you're wearing now?
No, not like that. I paused, trying to think of a way to best explain my theory. The armor I'm wearing now, I'm inclined to believe, was made with regular iron and had a pigment added to it, hence the blackened tint, then given a simple enchantment for strength and agility. The scrap we've recovered from the pillar of iron in the tower, on the other hand, is different, despite being blackened in the same way. I pulled a forearm-long shard out of my inventory, holding the dark metal to the light. The other day I tested this very piece in the heart of our forge for hours. Along with a scrap of leftover armor, the armor completely melted, but the shard didn't. In fact, it was completely cool to the touch once I pulled it out of the forge.
Really? Jenkins looked intrigued. I hadn't thought to touch it. But then again, I'd really rather not have lost my hand if I were wrong.
Why does everyone think I touched it with my hand? I gave the smith an exasperated look, having heard the same thing when I'd mentioned it to my friends.
But you have a bit of a reputation for touching things that shouldn't be touched.
Jenkins managed to cough out, giving me an embarrassed look.
Oh, come on, I exclaimed while rolling my eyes. You touch one magic crystal that happens to unfreeze several hundred spiders frozen in time, and everyone thinks you have a problem. Didn't I hear that you also singed your hand touching Donovan's rod, too?
Jenkins asked pointedly. You want to think about what you just said? I shot a raised eyebrow back at Jenkins. Because that didn't sound right to my ears.
What? I've no idea what...
Jenkins paused, then barked a short laugh at his verbal slip-up.
Anyway, the shard was cool.
It was, and I have no idea why, I explained while indicating the open hearth forge that was under construction at the center of the foundry. I'm hoping that this new forge will be able to melt the shards and eventually large pieces of the iron pillar we found, if we can ever get it back to Aldford.
Well, we certainly have the manpower for it now.
Jenkins waved a hand to indicate the rest of the town.
Never thought I'd see so many people in Aldford so soon. I can't believe how quickly we've grown.
It's coming together, I nodded happily at Jenkins. Hopefully this group of adventurers will be as well-behaved as the others.
So far so good,
Jenkins replied optimistically, before his face took on a slightly concerned look.
The adventurers did bring quite a few odd things with them, though. Written backs have been forced to set up a quarantine for a few items.
Hang on. My eyes shot wide open at that statement. A quarantine? What exactly did they bring? Jenkins snorted and rolled his eyes.
What didn't they bring? I wish I knew what crossed the heads of some of these adventurers.
I should probably check this quarantine out, I said, feeling suddenly nervous. Where is it?
Probably not a bad idea, Jenkins agreed. It's just outside of the town hall for the time being. Leandra was pretty adamant about keeping it far away from the crafting hall.
Oh, fantastic. The nerves that I was experiencing intensifying at the news. If it was bad enough that Leandra didn't want anything to do with it, then I knew it was serious. I waved at the smith and began to move towards the foundry entrance. See you later, Jenkins. Whatever reply he had was drowned out by the sound of my running feet. Chapter 7.
Can you describe the snake to me?
Bax's voice was the first thing I heard as I jogged up to the quarantine, spotting him, Rit, and a swaying half-orc adventurer standing around a crate of boxes.
Yeah.
The half-orc's speech was slurred as he replied to the scoutmaster.
It looked like an angry rope.
How is that even helpful?
Rit's voice demanded angrily, his temper already shot for the morning. As I approached the trio, I could see that the adventurer was clutching his arm, and his gray-green skin was extremely pale.
It's a rope snake. It really does look like a length of rope. Bought it from a mage's lab back in Iberia,
the adventurer replied, slowly shaking his head.
I think he may have been transfigured from a garden viper or something, but he's not normally so bitey. All the people around here are making him nervous.
You fucking adventurers are making me nervous!
Rit practically yelled at the adventurer.
What the hell possessed you to take a snake that looked like a rope with you?
I thought he looked cool.
The half-orc swayed on his feet drunkenly as he took a step back from Rit's verbal assault.
I was hoping to bind him as a familiar one day. His venom is pretty potent.
Yeah, I can tell.
Bax was looking at the adventurer with growing concern.
You should go see Sheila and get her to purge your system. You look awful.
Okay, yeah, I think I'll do that. I'm really not feeling that great.
The adventurer slowly turned his body towards the town hall, looking increasingly unsteady on his feet with every second that passed.
Please let me know if you find Noodles. I know he didn't bite me on purpose. I just want him back in one piece.
You ninja snake! Noodle!
Rit began to say with exasperation before the scoutmaster interrupted.
If we find him, we'll let you know,
Bax replied gently, shaking his head as the adventurer stumbled away from us.
Morning, guys,
I greeted the pair hesitantly, my eyes looking over at several stacks of crates that had been grouped together. Almost all of them had bright red lettering on them stating, Do not open. Dangerous.
Morning, Lyrian.
Bax was the first to greet me, the muscular half-elf giving me a cheerful wave as I approached.
How is everything working out?
I asked cautiously, noting the contrast between the frazzled-looking Rit and the calm, relaxed demeanor that Bax projected.
Not too bad, all things considered,
the white-haired scoutmaster replied evenly, wiping his hands on the sleeveless leather tunic he wore.
We only have a few crates left that have been unclaimed, likely belonging to those who didn't survive the bandit attack, and a handful more that just need to be stored in a secure area before we release them back to the adventurers that own them.
Lyrian!
Rit's voice sounded like it was on the verge of becoming unhinged.
These adventurers! They're bringing creatures into the village! Fat Man Snake is the least of our worries!
Creatures? I asked, looking over the crates one more time. What sort of creatures?
All kinds!
Rit exclaimed, slapping his hand down on a crate, which started buzzing angrily.
I think there's a hive of bees inside this one, and at least three others. For what purpose someone would want bees, I don't know.
Honey, maybe? I offered, my eyes going wide as other boxes began to buzz in sympathy with the crate Rit had slapped.
If that's the only reason, I'm still inclined to throw the crates into Crater Lake and let them sink.
Rit scowled at me.
I don't need to deal with this.
Could always make mead with the honey,
Bax suggested as he crossed his heavily scarred arms over his chest.
I'm sure some of the farmers outside the town would be happy to buy the hives too. Could be worth a fair bit of money.
Now think about it.
Rit grunted, his avarice clearly not allowing him to turn down the opportunity to make a profit.
As long as I'm not the one who has to worry about moving them. But that's still not all I have to worry about.
Rit motioned for me to follow him to yet another pile of crates that had a thick tarp thrown over them and had been roped off, preventing easy access. As we got closer, I couldn't help but notice that the tarp had been pinned down to the ground by rather heavy-looking stones.
Another one of these lunatic adventurers brought cages filled with cockatrice.
Rit let out a loud yelp as he suddenly spotted Amaranth sitting on all fours behind the piles of boxes, staring at something moving beneath the tarp. Almost immediately, Amaranth's eyes fixated on mine and his cool voice filtered into my head.
There is something delicious under this covering,
the cat said without any preamble.
Command this man to give me whatever is stored within. I am hungry.
Rit? I turned to look at the distressed merchant. What exactly is under there? Amaranth wants to eat it.
Shit! I'm sorry, the cat scared me. I thought something had gotten loose.
Rit took a deep breath to help steady his nerves.
In these cages are half a dozen cockatrices, you know? Those half-chicken, part-bat, part-lizard things? They can paralyze you with a glance and poison you with the barb on their tail?
Yeah? I couldn't help but stutter at the final part of Rit's description. Do you know who brought them into the village?
Oh, of course I do!
Rit moved over to a second tarp, an arm's length away from the cockatrice-filled crates, and pulled the covering free, revealing a paralyzed dwarven adventurer lying flat on the ground, his arms splayed out before him.
I told him to move these stupid chickens outside of Alford, but the idiot had to peek into the cages and got caught full blast by the glare of all six of the birds 10 hours ago. I covered him with a tarp in the hope he could still sleep while paralyzed.
Rit, why didn't you get Sheila to try and cure him? I practically shouted at the young merchant.
Because he brought six fucking birds that could paralyze half the town while they died of poison. He needed a lesson.
He pointed a finger at me angrily before waving at the town hall.
The only reason I haven't gotten Constantine to set these boxes on fire is because, despite the threat that these stupid cockatrices pose to the town, their eggs are delicious, and literally every adventurer in Alford has offered me a fistful of coins if I can get them a dozen eggs or more.
Wait, they lay eggs? I felt myself falling behind in the conversation, having momentarily panicked when Rit mentioned Constantine and fire in the same sentence.
Yeah? In fact, I have a hard-boiled one right here.
Without breaking stride, Rit pulled a large speckled egg out of a pouch on his waist.
Ragnar just boiled a handful for me less than an hour ago. Should be fresh.
Thanks. I took the egg from Rit, calling up the food stats in my vision, my eyes instantly widening in surprise. Hard-boiled cockatrice egg. Food, meal, benefit, satiate hunger for 3 hours, regenerate 3 health every 5 seconds for 3 hours when not in combat, +1 to all attributes for 3 hours, part of a balanced breakfast.
Is this for me?
Amaranth sprang up from his position near the hidden cockatrices and moved to sit in front of me, licking his chops in preparation. Sure. I replied, looking down at the massive cat, and cracked the shell of the egg on my knuckles before beginning to peel it. I can see why adventurers would want to have a ton of these. They also seem to be well-loved by ether-warped pumas, too.
It wouldn't be too difficult to set up a farm to breed them.
Vax spoke up, clearly more open-minded to embrace challenges than Rit was.
We can fashion a hood to take their paralytic glare away and cut the barb out of their tails. Besides, this type of cockatrice is much more manageable than their greater cockatrice cousins, whose glare can turn you to stone instead of just paralyzing you.
If you can make it work, I'd say go for it. I nodded at the scoutmaster and an increasingly pale-looking Rit.
A cockatrice... farm!
Rit whimpered nervously.
We'll see what the dwarf says about that when he wakes up.
Fair enough, I said as I finished peeling the cockatrice egg and gave it to Amaranth, watching it vanish down the cat's throat in a single bite.
Delicious, indeed,
the azure-furred puma purred. Is there anything else that I should be worrying about? I asked, feeling reasonably confident that if Rit became overwhelmed, Bax could step in and take over the quarantine duties.
Not really. At least assuming nothing gets loose,
Bax replied with an easy shrug as he waved at the pile of crates.
So far, the strangest things we've found is a glass box of what I think is part of a gelatinous cube, or maybe the entire creature. Never can be completely sure with him. After that, there was a crate completely filled with bones, if you can believe it, with a separate box containing half a dozen skulls to match, plus a crate full of unlabeled plants, powders, and something that might be acid that we want Marlin to look at before we figure out what to do with it. Oh, and a small box of really strange mushrooms that start shrieking whenever they're exposed to light.
Don't forget about that rope snake,
Rit added, clearly not sharing Bax's easy assessment.
Eh, It'll turn up, and everything'll be okay. Or it'll bite someone else, and they'll just kill it out of hand.
Back shrugged indifferently.
Either way, the problem will solve itself.
With my luck, it'll bite me,
Rit snorted pessimistically. A burst of noise and footsteps coming from the town hall had all of us turning as a fairly large group of adventurers left the building and made their way towards the southern entrance. Despite the early hour, all of them looked to be rather excited and moving with purpose, a handful even waving in our direction as they passed.
That's the Hallowguard Guild,
Bax told me, motioning towards the group.
They've asked Alwyn for permission to start their own settlement about a day's travel to the north, on the edge of the plains up there, and he's allowed it. Seeing how we don't have any eyes that far from the town, they might actually succeed at it too, since they actually stopped to ask and then listened to what some of the other adventurers and myself had seen out that way.
That's good, I guess. I watched the departing group with slightly ambivalent feelings. On the one hand, I was happy that we had managed to get a decent group of motivated individuals out into the region, but on the other, I was a little disappointed that they decided to leave Aldford to strike out on their own. Finding motivated and self-driven people was hard enough out here, and seeing 20 of them leaving when we could definitely use their help was a little frustrating. But it's not like we won't see them again, I thought optimistically. A day isn't that far to travel. And if they do succeed, we'll be a prime trading partner. It's better to make sure that they know we're nearby to help if they need it. We'll have to send some people to check up on them in a few days and see how they're doing, I said, making a mental note to follow up later on in the week.
Maybe we can give them these bees,
Rit added hopefully, nodding at me in agreement.
That'd be pretty far enough away from our tastes.
I can check on them later. Oh, heads up, Lyrian!
Bax cut himself off as three more people emerged from the town hall, this time turning directly towards us, moving quickly and with purpose. Crossing the short distance between us and the town hall, I had just enough time to identify two of the people as being Samuel and Quincy, the two Iberian mages we had rescued from both Graves and the goblins in the tower's underground chamber. The third man in front of them, however, I had never seen before today. Dressed in a dark, form-fitting robe with golden trimmings around the edges, the gray-haired man halted a short distance from the quarantine and looked over us with a scornful eye as he ground a crystal-topped walking stick into the dirt.
Baxter!
The sharply dressed man greeted the scoutmaster with a curt tone.
Samuel Quincy and I were just discussing the events that led up to the expedition's loss, along with the seizure of an Afarian ruin and Erovian tower. We will need your statement to provide to the Justicar.
Stanton?
Bax's voice took on a very flat tone as he cast a glance towards me.
As I've told both Quincy and Samuel, the expedition's loss was beyond our control. And as far as I'm concerned, there was no seizure of anything. Both the ruins were legally claimed by Lyrian and his guild, Virtus.
There are matters of kingdom security that have arisen that put those claims into question.
Stanton's voice took on a noticeably hard tone.
And I would remind you not to forget your contract with the expedition.
Bax waved a hand dismissively.
What expedition? Out of the 20 of us that left Iberia, there are only 5 of us still breathing. And even then it's a miracle that we're alive. Far as I'm concerned, I've fulfilled my end of our agreement and the expedition is dissolved.
I disagree.
The man's eyes narrowed.
Our contract is in force until the date specified.
I don't want to work for you anymore, Stanton. Nor do I feel safe doing so. If you have any complaints with that, take it up with the Justicar,
Bax spat, pointing at Samuel and Quincy.
Because I'm sure once I tell him how your two men there disregarded or overruled every single one of my basic security precautions and brought about the end of the expedition, he'll side in my favor.
You are not privy to all...
Hold up!
I'd been caught off guard by how quickly the conversation had unfolded, but I really didn't like what I was hearing. What's going on?
I do not like being interrupted,
the older man said flatly, shifting his dark gray eyes onto me. And I don't like what I'm hearing. I stared back at the man as Amaranth interposed himself between me and Stanton, a low growl echoing from his throat. We claimed those ruins through blood and sweat. If it weren't for us, the expedition would have been lost with all hands.
You and your guild's efforts in rescuing the remaining members of the expedition is acknowledged, Stanton stated emotionlessly. However, those runes cannot remain in your possession.
Why the hell not? I asked angrily. We intervened to prevent two major catastrophes that your expedition indirectly caused while poking around in those ruins. I'm going to need one hell of a good reason to even consider releasing them to someone.
You will not speak to Lord Stanton with such disrespect,
Quincy barked, moving to flank the older man.
Heep! Enough, Quincy.
Stanton raised a hand, cutting off the red-haired mage's tirade.
As much as it pains me to admit, he is correct, and his guild has proven itself to be competent. We will require their cooperation if we are to succeed in our mission.
Wait, I am? You do? I frowned at the man, not having expected his sudden change of heart. A small notification appeared in the corner of my vision, informed me why. Your renown in the region has greatly affected your standing with Lord Adrian Stanton. Your skill in wordplay has increased to level 12.
So that's what renown does.
My heart leapt as I read the notification.
I have arranged a meeting with the Justicar and Sir Aldwyn to explain the situation and to inform them of events that have transpired in Iberia,
Stanton continued, completely oblivious to my discovery.
You will make yourself available to attend.
Meeting? I felt off balance with how fast the conversation had moved. In seconds, we'd gone from having our claims stripped from us to now being involved in whatever was going on. I'm sorry, but just who are you exactly? The man fixed me with an unreadable expression.
My name is Lord Adrian Stanton of House Daenerys. I am here representing the Dowager Queen Emilia Daenerys in a matter regarding the kingdom's security.
He motioned to the town hall.
The meeting begins in 10 minutes. Don't be late.
Chapter 8
Lear, we've barely been logged in for longer than 20 minutes, and the rest of the group just left to go hunting for food.
Sierra exclaimed in disbelief as she entered the room and circled the massive table in the center, sitting down beside me.
What did you do?
I'm still trying to figure that out, I told Sierra, shaking my head slowly. I was just ambushed by a Lord Stanton from House Daenerys, just right outside the town hall. He said that he's here due to a matter of kingdom security, which would trump our claim to the hub and the tower. I talked fast and somehow managed to get an invite to the meeting.
Kingdom security?
Sierra repeated, looking at me with a confused expression.
Oldford is independent. Anything to do with Iberia doesn't concern us. What do you think is going on?
Not even the faintest idea, I said with a shrug. He did say he was representing the Dowager Queen, though, and not the king.
I wonder what that means.
Sierra shifted in her seat, clearly unsettled.
I don't know how much power an ex-queen retains, especially based on what you've told me about her.
There has to be something that we're missing, I whispered as the door burst open and a pale-looking Aldwyn rushed in, slamming the door behind him.
Darian, Sierra,
Aldwyn exclaimed while scanning the room, finding that we were the only two people inside it.
Stanton just told me that he invited you to the meeting.
What's happening, Aldwyn? I asked, having never seen him so worked up. You don't look that great.
Iberia's not doing well,
he replied gravely.
I've only spoken once with Stanton since his arrival, and what he has told me so far has me greatly worried.
Who is he exactly? Sierra whispered, lowering her voice as footsteps began echoing through the hallway outside.
He's the queen.
Alduin's mouth shut with an audible snap as the door opened and Stanton walked in, followed closely behind by Samuel and Quincy.
Ah, good. Frederick, you're already here.
Stanton inclined his head in greeting to the knight, his stoic expression at odds with the stress lining Alduin's face.
The commander and the Justicar are just moments behind us, along with Donovan and the Scoutmaster.
Hold on! There's a commander here, too? I couldn't help but ask, as the trio took their seats at the table. Alduin taking a seat on my left-hand side, sudden confusion blooming on his face as well.
Yes, I've asked her to join us,
Stanton replied as the door swung open once more, revealing a tall, brown-haired Iberian woman and Dire half a step behind her.
Ah, here she is now.
Lord Stanton.
The sharp-faced woman greeted the noble with a curt nod as she strode into the room, the heavy scale armor she wore jingling as she moved. As she sat down at the table, I noticed that her eyes had fixated on Alduin, not even bothering to glance in Sierra or my direction.
Sir Alduin?
Veronia, I didn't know you were here.
An unsteady look crossed Alduin's face as the woman stared intently at him.
Excuse my informality, Commander Tarius. Allow me to introduce Lyrian Rastler, the guild leader of Virtus, and his guildmate, Sierra Rain.
I am aware of them.
The woman's green eyes momentarily shifted to glance at Sierra and me, before settling back onto Alduin.
Introductions are not necessary.
Who is this woman? Is there something between her and Alduin? I glanced at Sierra, raising an eyebrow at her in silent question, only to have her nod ever so slightly in response. What the hell have we just been dragged into?
Please be seated, gentlemen.
Dire spoke from the head of the table, having once again displayed his uncanny ability to move silently despite the heavy armor he wore, his eyeless gaze looking towards Donovan and Bax, who had just entered the room. Once the pair were finally seated, Dyer shifted his head towards Stanton.
This is your meeting, Lord Stanton. Please proceed.
Thank you, Justicar.
The older man stood as he looked around the table, making eye contact with everyone as he spoke.
This information is considered privileged, and I would ask that you not disseminate it without the approval of the commander or myself.
Stanton paused, his stony demeanor landing on me as he continued.
I am afraid that I must inform you all that the Kingdom of Iberia is not well. We have been faced with numerous challenges over the last 6 weeks that have only served to intensify tensions already existing within both the nobility and military. As of right now, Queen Emilia considers Iberia to be in the first stages of civil war.
I heard a collective gasp echo around the table as everyone absorbed Stanton's statement.
The majority of these complications have arisen due to King Swain's actions, or lack of them.
Stanton continued.
He has begun shirking his duties in the extreme, and has not been seen publicly in over 3 weeks, nor has he been accepting visitors.
What is he doing with all his time, then? Sierra asked hesitantly.
As far as we can tell, he's been spending the majority of his time in prayer and isolation with a favored priest.
Stanton replied with a frown, the first sign of emotion that I'd seen cross his face.
A priest belonging to a new sect that has recently splintered off from Nil, the god of vengeance.
I'm not familiar with that god, I said, casting a quick glance around the table to see that I was not the only one.
I'm not surprised,
Bax spoke, leaning heavily on the table so that he could see everyone.
Nil is not the temple sort of god, with grand structures reaching into the sky. He's a god commonly worshipped by the poorest of the poor, or those who've been wronged by people with malice in their hearts.
Neil works without regard to law and order, focusing simply on vengeance,
Dyer stated from the head of the table.
Would all follow his teachings, the world would quickly become blind. His work often makes mythuses harder.
Be that as it may, Justicar, I would welcome the original teachings of Nil with open arms over the perverted teachings that this new cult is filling the king's head with,
Stanton said brusquely.
These new teachings no longer enshrine vengeance for actual wrongs, but now encourage active, violent revenge, even for perceived slights, a trait grossly unbefitting any king, let alone one like Swain.
Why the sudden interest in faith?
Alduin asked.
I watched the boy grow up his entire life without giving a priest the time of day. What changed?
What else could cause a man to change so drastically?
Stanton shook his head with a bitter scowl.
The king has found a woman he wishes to wed. However, she requires him to share the same faith as her before considering his proposal. To that end, she has granted him access to her own personal priest, and he now spends almost every waking moment studying the tenets of this perverted faith in order to please his bride-to-be.
And of course the king takes no counsel but his own,
Alduin grunted, matching Stanton's scowl.
In the king's best interest, we tried to have a detachment of knights remove both the priest and his mistress.
Veronia spoke up for the first time, turning to look at Stanton as she spoke.
However, the king ordered the royal guard to intervene. It was nearly a bloodbath.
After that, we lost all visibility into the palace,
Stanton explained.
Swain has forbidden all but the royal guard to be present in the palace and has ordered nearly the entire military out of the city, likely fearing that a coup was imminent.
He's left Iberia undefended? I couldn't help but blurt out in surprise.
Not entirely,
Veronia declared in what I was beginning to learn was her only tone of voice.
The king is clearly not in the right mind to be making decisions at the moment.
Sierra chopped a hand through the air with frustration. Why did the military obey that order?
It didn't,
Stanton answered with a grimace on his face.
At least not until Queen Emilia endorsed it.
The queen is not in the chain of command,
Alduin cut in, his expression one of concern as he scanned both Veronia and Stanton's faces for clues.
The military, the commander's father, should not have obeyed any command she gave.
Veronia's father is in the military? I exchanged a quick glance of surprise with Sierra. Sounds like he's pretty high up, too.
You begin to understand the scope of our problems, then.
Stanton replied as Veronia simply stared at Alduin, silently.
The queen has no interest or right to rule in Iberia, yet she and Marshal Tarius find themselves holding the reins of power until Swain comes to his senses.
You can't be serious,
I exclaimed, not believing what I was hearing. You'd give Swain back control? He's clearly shown that he can't handle the responsibility of actually running the kingdom. Why don't you just elect another noble to be king?
And fully invite the civil war we are trying to avoid?
Stanton asked rhetorically, his expression one of frustration.
Events in Iberia have already escalated to the point where the noble houses are killing one another in the streets as they brutally trim one another's family trees of excess sons or daughters. Attempting to get them to agree on a candidate to replace Swain would require a small ocean of blood, and would almost certainly ensure Iberia's destruction when the holy ascendancy of Elagos comes calling at our door again.
The room fell completely silent at Stanton's last words. Everyone, including myself, too stunned to reply.
If our problems were not serious enough, negotiations with the Ascendancy have deteriorated beyond repair. Our latest terms were rejected with such vehemence that we feared military action was likely to follow.
Stanton went on to explain after his words had a moment to sink in.
which is why Marshal Tarius was forced to approach the Queen to clarify the scope of his orders after the King ordered him out of the city. Unfortunately for us, we had assumed that any attack by the Ascendancy would have begun through Coldscar and sought to reinforce it as soon as possible, Stanton said, pausing for a moment to look at all of us. However, we were wrong.
Wait, Iberia was attacked?
Alduin exclaimed, glancing between Stanton and Veronia as he waited for an answer.
Nearly, Stanton replied with a curt nod. The invasion was thwarted by the slimmest of margins, thanks to a group of adventurers that were caught up in the midst of a conspiracy designed to sow chaos in Iberia.
A conspiracy? I echoed in disbelief. What happened?
The details of the event would take some time to recall, and only the adventurers involved know the true extent of what happened, Stanton told me as his face turned into a grimace. I would advise you to ask them directly, but I do not anticipate that they will be forthcoming with many details.
The adventurers came with you? Sierra perked up in surprise as she looked around the room. Why aren't they here now?
They declined to join the meeting, Stanton answered in clipped tones. The terms of their service have made them rather difficult to work with, even if they have agreed to aid the Queen in this matter.
And what matter is this exactly?
Alduin asked pointedly, glancing between Stanton and Ronia.
I cannot begin to understand why Aldford would be anyone's concern, given the scope of the problems back in Iberia.
That is far from correct,
Stanton replied while leaning forward and focusing intently at Alduin.
At the moment, the Queen considers Aldford one of the most, if not the most, important strategic asset in the region.
She does?
The knight asked, clearly dumbfounded. Because of the ruins? I queried, remembering how I'd been dragged into this conversation.
After a fashion, yes, but also no,
the silver-haired noble replied while motioning to the expedition members sitting at the table.
It is because of what was found within those runes, specifically.
Ether!
Donovan spoke up with a tinge of anger coloring his voice, carefully looking at the expressions of Stanton and the other two mages.
You three already knew that the ruins out here were likely Nefarian in origin, didn't you?
We had strong evidence to believe that was the case,
Samuel replied quietly, reminding me that I had rarely heard the dark-skinned mage's voice over the last month.
But we weren't certain until the events in the tower.
Why didn't you tell me?
Donovan demanded, staring directly at Stanton.
I was in charge of the expedition. I should have known. I would have done things differently.
You were not fully informed because your political reliability was unknown.
Stanton returned Donovan's stare without even blinking.
You have risen through the Mages Guild ranks, bereft of any patron guiding your path, and you are not affiliated with any of the houses, nor have you ever shown any inclination to ever be involved with one. Should the expedition have successfully discovered ether in one of the runes, Samuel and Quincy would have briefed you accordingly.
Nearly the entire expedition died because you withheld that knowledge from me,
Donovan practically shouted.
A decision that the Queen and I were forced to make, based on the political situation back in Iberia when we first organized the expedition,
Stanton replied stoically.
It may not have been a good one, but it was the least bad one available to us.
Why is the ether so important? Sierra intervened, glancing between Donovan and Stanton before the argument escalated.
Because it can be used to power ancient Nefarian technology,
Donovan declared, shifting his glance towards Sierra and me.
We have discovered countless Nefarian artifacts as we've excavated and explored the ruins that Iberia was founded on, all of them inert and harmless. At least until a spark of ether is applied, something we have precious little of available to us.
Based on our research, we've long since theorized that ages ago, Iberia was once connected to a vast network of ley lines that spanned the entire continent, drawing ether from the ground to use in all kinds of devices. Donovan continued explaining. But during the war with the Arovian dynasty, the ley line to Iberia was somehow severed, and the Nafar that once inhabited the city were quickly overrun and slaughtered when their magical defenses failed. Almost their entire culture and way of life depended on ether, and the devices they had built to use it, from the mundane sort, like heatless lamps, to light the city streets, to truly useful ones that could move mountains of earth in a heartbeat, to weapons that could turn the tide of a war. Veronia finished, turning her head to look at Donovan.
Or serve as a deterrent to prevent one altogether? I won't pretend that we have altruistic motivations for the use of ether, Stanton said, nodding with Ronia's statement and ignoring Donovan's scowl. But with the inevitable conflict between Iberia and the Ascendancy building, we need to secure every single advantage we possibly can, and restoring Iberia's access to the ley line network would be an incalculable benefit to either avoiding the war or giving us enough of an advantage to survive it. Fate, however, is a cruel mistress. And despite the seriousness of Iberia's situation, there is a much more immediate and pressing concern that I've come to warn you all about that directly concerns Oldford.
Stanton held up a hand to hold any questions.
Approximately 1 month ago, the Mage's Guild began detecting a gradual yet consistent increase in the etheric energy permeating the surrounding region. The timing of which, I have just recently learned, coincides with the removal of an Arovian annulment sphere from a well set into the ley line.
What does that mean exactly? I asked, seeing the same expression of confusion on Sierra's face that I had on mine.
It means that in addition to whatever its original purpose was, the annulment sphere has been serving as a stopgap measure to keep the ruptured ley line in check.
Donovan's face had turned pale.
The moment that it was removed, the ether began flowing once more, at least up until whatever point where the ley line had ruptured. Then what would happen to it?
Alduin demanded, his voice breaking as he glanced between all the mages at the table, including me.
It would just continue flowing,
Donovan replied.
Perhaps if the ground was soft enough, it would sink deeper into the earth and eventually dissipate. But if it wasn't,
it would accumulate and continue accumulating until the etheric energy reaches a critical mass,
Stanton explained, staring directly at me as he spoke.
It is imperative that we determine where the rupture is and attempt to seal the ley line and redirect it back towards its normal channels as soon as possible, lest it ignites.
What would the damage be if it did?
Alduin whispered, his voice colored with disbelief.
Impossible to tell accurately,
Stanton answered quietly.
But I am certain that Oldford and the surrounding region wouldn't survive it, and by extension, neither will Iberia.
Once again, silence took over the room, everyone looking at one another blankly as they absorbed Stanton's latest bombshell. Sierra and I traded nervous looks before nodding at one another in silent agreement.
We know where the rupture is.
Sierra broke the silence. All eyes focusing on her.
It's right here,
I finished, while putting a hand across my face.
It's right under Oldford.
Chapter 9. Based on what we've been able to determine from exploring the area, we think that there once was an Afarian city where Crater Lake is now. I told Stanton and all the mages as we left the town hall and walked towards the ether-warped oak tree, outlining the damage that we had seen in the outlying region surrounding Oldford.
and that it was catastrophically destroyed during the war with the Aerovian dynasty, wiping out nearly every trace that a city once stood here. All that we've been able to find so far are a pair of collapsed ruins, left buried under stone.
I pray that whatever magic or technology their ancestors had that allowed them to create such destruction has long since been lost, and not inherited by the Ascendancy, Stanton said with a worried note in his voice. Else we might find ourselves looking at Iberia or Coldscar in a similar state one day.
Hopefully, I agreed wholeheartedly. The last thing we needed was having magic capable of destroying cities in the hands of adventurers, the majority of which wouldn't even hesitate to use it. Given the extent of the devastation to the landscape, I'm fairly certain that whatever event destroyed the city also caused the ley line to rupture.
I agree with your logic,
Stanton replied, his voice tinged with awe as he craned his head upwards while we approached the massive ether-warped tree.
In all my life, I have never seen or read of anything like this. The wood at the base of the tree almost appears to be crystalline. Yet the further I look up the tree, the more it resembles natural, if azure-colored wood.
I nodded at the man while following his gaze towards the tree. It had come a long way since the tiny sapling that had sprouted from the glowing ichor of the webwood whore that had invaded the town several weeks ago, having grown easily 70 feet tall as it clawed its way into the sky, still continuing to grow a handful of inches every day that passed. More recently, a noticeable change began to take hold of the tree as it grew, its base gradually beginning to lose its wooden texture, appearing smoother, and as Stanton mentioned, almost crystalline in appearance. We had no frame of reference of what to expect during the tree's lifetime, nor any idea if it would ever stop growing. But for the moment, it had become a very much loved feature of Oldford, its constant azure glow a beacon of rest and safety. Several weeks ago, I used an Iberian etherscope to look at the tree in the magical spectrum, I told Stanton as Donovan opened a familiar-looking case and pulled free two lengths of bone, offering one to both Stanton and myself. I managed to see the tree's entire root system and the barest glimpse of the ley line before the etherscope burned my hand to the bone.
Really?
Stanton accepted the bone etherscope with great interest, looking over the intricate carvings carefully.
It should not have done that.
He said the same thing, I replied, motioning to Donovan with a thin smile.
Lyrian's ether-warping has given him a greater sensitivity to magic, and he is somehow able to push the boundaries we once thought were immutable,
Donovan explained to the other mage.
Unfortunately, that somehow created a feedback loop in the iron etherscope, causing mana to build up in the device until it quite literally seared the flesh from his hand. Interesting.
Stanton shifted his glance from the etherscope to me.
Samuel and Quincy had mentioned to me that your condition was the result of overexposure to ether, the same with your familiar.
There were extenuating circumstances to both situations. I didn't quite know how to reply to Stanton's statement, his direct approach to my warped appearance not something that I'd been expecting.
Both situations?
The noble's eyes widened in surprise.
I would like to hear how exactly they came about when the time presents itself. It seems I have not heard the full story of your adventures.
Sure, I replied hesitantly, still not trusting the man and how quickly he had swooped into Oldford with his vague warnings. Despite everything that Stanton has told us, I feel like I'm missing something out of the big picture, I thought.
Excellent. Now, what of this bone etherscope I'm holding?
Stanton indicated the wand in his hand.
This is Aerovian in origin, no?
It is, I replied, happy to be on more familiar ground. We found them in a storage room within the tower's underground chamber, and it appears that they have an ever so slightly better range than the Iberian etherscopes, and do not overheat while being used.
Useful?
Stanton commented while pointing the wand towards the base of the tree.
The image appears slightly more distinct, too.
It does, Quincy agreed, having been offered a wand by Donovan while Stanton and I spoke.
This is quite remarkable,
I heard Samuel whisper from behind me.
We should have thought to use these earlier.
Turning towards the tree, I gripped the etherscope tightly and pointed it towards the ground. Taking a deep breath, I activated True Sight, instantly watching the shadows of the world vanish as my vision shifted into the magical spectrum. Canting my head towards the ground to avoid the bright glare of the tree, the root system bloomed to life as snaking white lines appeared in my vision, gradually transitioning to a deep azure tint the deeper into the ground they descended. Eventually it became impossible to determine the individual strands of roots, only seeing a single faint line as the roots began to blur together. As the etherscope began to reach the edge of its range, the ley line I remembered seeing before appeared. However, this time it was thicker and brighter than I recalled, and now had a small kidney-shaped blob appearing just beside it. The rupture, I realized, swallowing hard as I compared its brightness to the ley line. It doesn't look too bright just yet.
There is something just on the edge of my vision,
Stanton whispered, kneeling on the ground in the hope that the extra few feet would make a difference.
I can see the faintest hint something is there, just beyond the ley line.
It's there,